Welcome, everybody, to the Troubadour Podcast. Today, I'll be reading A Cradle Song by William Blake. And no, I will not be singing A Cradle Song by William Blake from his book, The Songs of Innocence. Although you could sing this song. In fact, it is meant and it has the feel of a nursery rhyme. And it's meant as a nursery rhyme. It's meant to emulate that kind of nursery rhyme. It's what a mother would sing or hum. And sing to her infant, very young baby. And you're going to see that the narrator, the singer in this poem, is clearly a mother singing to her infant. And that's going to be part of what the meaning and understanding of what William Blake is trying to accomplish. This is, like many of his poems, and especially in Songs of Innocence, a very, very simple poem. You know, I've said this many times before, but William Blake is one of the better poets, I think, one of the better classic, romantic, great poets that you can read to a young child and they will understand it on one level. And in fact, you could also read it to yourself or, you know, an older child, an adult, and the adult will get a completely different understanding of the poem, and both will be correct, according to William Blake. That's his point. Now, the Songs of Innocence, which this is one of them, was combined in 1794 with the Songs of Experience to make the Songs of Innocence and Experience, showing the two contrary states of the human soul. So Blake believed that there was innocence and experience playing and kind of swirling about within us, and that you can represent them or think of them as thesis and antithesis. So you have these two combating ideas. They're clashing, they're evolving, they're, you know, merging into one another. And that creates a synthesis. This is called the dialectic process. And he, Blake, was a person who believed in that kind of dialogue, that, you know, two things coming together to create something new. And that's what was in every single individual human soul. As opposed to someone like William Wordsworth, who believed there was a much more of a cutoff. It was more, you know, he put it as your innocence is recompensed, as though you lose your innocence almost completely, and there is something lost. And he talks a lot about the loss in his poems, William Wordsworth. But you gain what William Wordsworth calls the philosophic mind. So you lose innocence and you gain a philosophical mind. With Blake, he believes that those things are always within you. And he even doesn't talk about philosophical mind as what you're gaining. He actually thinks of it as something like some kind of experience with suffering. And he is much more interested in understanding of the suffering and the pain that you might or that you will inevitably encounter in life. So again, I think of William Blake as very much a 18th century Jordan Peterson figure. He is not pro the church, but he is very pro the mythology of Christianity. And in fact, he's writing within, and he's even creating his own Christian mythology. And he's very interested in using the imagination to expand our moral abilities and thoughts. And you're going to see in this lullaby Christian mythology and Christian, a little bit of Christian ideology, particularly regarding Jesus and the baby in the manger. So let me go ahead and show you the panel that goes with this. This is a hand-drawn, hand-colored creation that when you bought this book, The Songs of Innocence, and experience in 1794, this is what you would get if you were one of the few people who bought it. And you could see it's this, you know, beautiful, it's a painting, essentially. I mean, it looks like a work of art. And in fact, William Blake was known for his painting, his actual drawings, almost as much as his words, as his fiction. Now, you can see in this second image here. So if you're listening to this on the Spotify, iTunes, or wherever you listen to podcasts, then hop on over to TubidorMag.com or just Google A Cradle Song, the images, and you'll see the images I'm talking about here. But the first one is just the text itself, handwritten, with some leaves, and it looks like a corn, you know, on the side. But, you know, I think it's something about autumn and birth and, you know, the coming of this new creation. And then on the second page, you have an actual drawing of a woman overlooking her infant. So you can see the simple imagery here, and that should tune in what he wanted. William Blake really much, very much wanted you to, you know, experience the artistry, the painting with the words, not separated. So I always say on, you know, reading, as I'm reading William Blake to you, that the way I'm doing it, if you're watching me, is incorrect. That is, you know, to do it with a blank sheet of white paper with the text on it. That's not how he wanted you to experience it. He wanted you to experience it like this, to hold a book in your hand, to see it, to feel it, and, you know, really to experience the whole total idea here. Because when you look at this, you see this, you know, looks like a handmade, hand-me-down cradle that's probably been in the family for generations. You have this woman with her white head dressing of some sort in her red dress, and she's looking over this infant whose head is to the side, and it looks like there might be, even be a small little smile. And we're going to read a lot, you know, about what the smile means to her. And then we're going to read about a contrast of something that she is experiencing. Okay, so let us read this poem and then go through it stanza by stanza and see what we is going, see what's going on here. And I think it's a pretty simple phrasing or meaning, but there's, you know, some underpinnings that can complicate it a little bit. Okay. A Cradle Song by William Blake. Sweet dreams form a shade o'er my lovely infant's head. Sweet dreams of pleasant streams be by silent by happy silent moony beams. Sweet sleep with soft down weave thy brows an infant crown. Sweet sleep, angel mild, hover o'er my happy child. Sweet smiles in the night hover over my delight. Sweet smiles, mother's smiles, all the livelong night beguiles. Sweet moans, dove-like sighs, chase not slumber from thy eyes. Sweet moans, sweeter smiles, all the dove-like moans beguiles. Sleep, sleep, happy child, all creation slept and smiled. Sleep, sleep, happy sleep, while o'er thee thy mother weep. Sweet babe in thy face, holy image I can trace. Sweet babe, once like thee, thy maker lay and wept for me. Wept for me, for thee, for all, when he was an infant small. Thou his image ever see, heavenly face that smiles on thee. Smiles on thee, on me, on all, who became an infant small. Infant smiles are his own smiles, heaven and earth to peace beguiles. Okay. So again, you know, I recommend you reading this out loud, even if you can. And I did this by myself. I don't think I would do this for pretty much most people, but I did sing it, you know, in a, you know, you can even do this to, like, I think Twinkle Twinkle Little Star or something like that kind of cadence. And you'll see that this does kind of match up with a nursery rhyme, a nursery song. And that's what it's meant for. But again, we have to think about what the meaning is. And if you remember, if you were following along with the other poems that I've been reading from William Blake's Songs of Innocence, you know that one of the things he's interested in is the stories that we tell our young, why we tell them the stories we tell them, what it does to them, and what it does to them when they grow up. So, you know, what does the slave mother in England, the black slave mother in England, telling her little black slave boy, not her slave, but her child, who's also a slave in England, what does she tell him as a story? She doesn't tell him how to file away his chains, how to make a knife or a shiv to kill his, you know, enemies, which are his masters. She tells him a placating story about why he looks different and is in a different situation than his white, people that he's living around, all these white people in England. And she tells him this story about how, and it feels pleasant when you read the poem, it feels oddly pleasant. And it shouldn't be. It should be horrifying, because you have to keep in mind that this is a slave, a boy that was born in Africa and taken as a baby and taken to England. And so you have to keep that in mind. And it really, changes the complete tone and understanding of that poem. And it's called The Little Black Boy. And the story she tells him is how, because he's black, the reason he's black is because he is able to withstand the love of God, which is equated to the sun. So it's like, you know, if you were to put something closer to heat, it would burn up, right, and turn black. And that's what he had. And, you know, it's his duty and job and his privilege to shade the weaker, the less capable white people. So it has this weird kind of twist on, we're able to withstand the power of God's love. And so we should, protect the white people who are weaker in order to do that. But again, if you think about what it means that and at the end of the poem, the little black boy tells that story to a little white boy. We never hear what the little white boy says about it. But, you know, it's kind of his own reassuring story that we tell, that the mother tells to this young boy. And that makes him feel okay with the order of the world. And you get that a little bit with a lot of the poems in the Songs of Innocence and Experience. And, you know, it's about how there's the way that he puts it in The Piper, the first introduction poem to the Songs of Innocence, is that when you pick up the pen, so you have these stories that the ancients would tell, where they would just have their pipe and they'd go around and they'd dance and sing and they were at one with nature. But then they picked up a pen. Right, they made a pen, and they just, the wording is stained the water clear, and it's a really interesting way to think about it, where there's a kind of a staining, a shading with something darker that you're doing when you're writing, and that process of creating through words, and in this case, the stories that we tell, even in speech, have a kind of stain to them. And, take that into consideration as you're reading all of these things. So let's look at let's investigate this poem a little bit closer. So we have sweet dreams form a shade o'er my lovely infant's head. That's the first sentence. So we could just just literally the eyes are closed. There's a shade, right? You could think of maybe she shading him as another way you could look at the analogy, but it's really the eyes are closed. The baby's asleep. Just a poetic way of saying the baby's asleep and covered, with enjoying sweet dreams. And then again, sweet dreams of pleasant streams by happy, silent, moony beams. It's a really pleasant way of painting a quick little picture of a pastoral. And you can look at other of my videos when I talk about pastoral poetry. It's a simple little image of a pastoral image, a pastoral scene. So sweet dreams of pleasant streams. So she hopes kind of that the baby is enjoying pleasant streams, by a happy, silent, moony beam. The next stanza, sweet sleep with soft down. So think about down, maybe something you put in the pillow, but also the feathers on a bird. They're very soft. Weave thy brows an infant crown. Sweet sleep, angel mild, hover over my happy child. Now, I think here what we're getting is you know, and the soft down thing, I did have to look that up. So if you're, you know, if you think of like a down pillow, that's what I thought of. But I think you could also look at that as the feathers on a bird. And so there's a relation between the brows of the infant and, you know, putting, you know, maybe the you could think of wings coming over the back of the infant, covering its brow. You could think of, you know, it's also it has a crown, maybe a halo of some sort. I mean, so it's, I think the basic idea that he's trying to say here, sweet sleep with soft down, weave thy brows an infant crown, sweet sleep, angel mild, is he's trying to, you know, or she, the mother, is painting the picture of a baby, her baby, that is an angel, that looks like an angel. And think of the old traditional cherubic, you know, what you might think of Cupid flying around with its baby wings, that kind of thing. Although not actually the god of love, but just a, you know, cherubic baby floating around with its wings up. Next stanza. Sweet smiles in the night hover over my delight. Sweet smiles, mother's smiles, all the livelong night beguiles. So that we're getting almost a wishful thinking, right? A hope, I should say, for her child. Sweet smiles in the night hover over my delight. Like, do that. Hover over my delight. What's her delight? Her baby, right? Sweet smiles, mother's smiles, all the livelong night beguiles. So she's beguiling, tricking, charming the night. Next stanza. And you know, try to think about this is, you know, again, a song being sung. It's a wish, it's a hope, and it's what the mother is trying to do for her, you know, the love of her life, her infant child. Sweet moans, dove-like sighs, chase not slumber from thy eyes. Sweet moans, sweeter smiles, all the dove-like moans beguiles. Now, just like these other stanzas, we're getting sweet, sweet a lot. We're getting sweet, you know, sleep, sleep, sweet smiles. We're getting that S sound a lot, right? Sweet smiles again. And then we get, instead of sweet smiles or sweet sleep or sweet dreams, you could look at there's a progression even. Sweet dreams, okay, sweet sleep, okay, sweet smiles. And then we get sweet moans. Now, moans is an interesting word to take in. And you have to really take words seriously. You can't pass by them. When a poet like William Blake uses the word moans, he's not, like it wouldn't do you service to pass over that as though, oh, it's, you know, he just kind of chose it because it rhymed or, you know, fit in a little bit. It wasn't a big deal. He's choosing that on purpose. It's making a really clear transgression or change in the mood almost, because there's a big difference between smiles, between dreams, between sleep and moans. I mean, when do you moan? I mean, think about a moan. Take the word seriously. What actually comes to your mind? What's the first thing? Being perfectly honest with yourself. If it's for me, it's completely sex, right? And that, I think, is the accurate way to look at it. And if you look at what a moan is, there's, you know, I think it, the dictionary definition mentions two times when you moan, when you have some kind of frustration or emotional pain or sexual pleasure, right? Those are the two times it's usually mentioned. Now, maybe they go together. You know, I don't know. In there, you could think of it as maybe he wanted both of them, but I definitely think there's something about experience going on here. That's also part of this, which you think of experience, you don't think of a virgin necessarily. You think of someone who's had sex. So there's something, you know, this is a mother singing to her child, and she's saying sweet moans, dove-like sighs, chase not slumber from thy eyes. So one way to think about the meaning of that is, you know, she's asking for this, not the chase not slumber from thy eyes, that she doesn't want the pleasures of life to take away from the innocence of this sleeping babe, right? Another way you could think of this is that when she's almost afraid at this point, or she's starting to worry as she sings this song or thinks about it, that her child may not wake up as a child, right? There's going to be a moment, and she knows this. Maybe she's already been a parent, or maybe she just knows this because it's logical. It's just obviously we, all humans go through this, that there's going to be a moment when the child awakens and it's no longer a child. And, you know, maybe this could be its sexual awakening. And when this has that, you know, when a human goes through that process, it's not a child in the way that it is at the moment in the cradle. And she can see that. She can see it as the mother. You know, she experienced it. She knows people have experienced it. She knows humans, right? She's a human. So she knows that this happens, and she knows it's going to happen to this infant, her infant, that there's going to be a time when slumber awakens, or it awakens, the infant awakens from slumber, chase not slumber from your eyes, when slumber is chased from its eyes, and it feels or experiences or desires the sweet-like moans, the dove-like sighs. Sweet moans, sweeter smiles, all the dove-like moans beguiles. You know, and that, again, I think is a idea that you're going to see, hear these moans, you're going to hear these smiles, dove-like moans, you know, are going to charm you. And so this might be an infant boy. It probably is an infant boy. And so the, you know, charms of a woman. Sleep, sleep, happy child, all creation slept and smiled. Sleep, sleep, happy sleep, while o'er thee thy mother weep. Okay, so now we have a juxtaposition, a contrast between the sleeping babe and the weeping mother. So why is the mother weeping, right? It's just a sleeping child. Sleep, sleep, happy child, all creation slept and smiled, right? All creation's fine. But why is then the mother sleep, sleep, happy sleep, while over thee, over you, your mother weeps? And I think we're going to get an answer, at least an implication of what an answer could be for why she's weeping. She goes on, sweet babe, excuse me, sweet babe in thy face, holy image I can trace. Sweet babe, once like thee, thy maker lay and wept for me. So now we have something of sweet babe in your face, holy image I can trace. So now we're getting this very Christian idea, or this broader religious idea, that she can literally see the holy, you know, Jesus in the face of her baby. And we know the story of Jesus, of course, and that story is going to play out with all babies. And this is something that Jordan Peterson literally talks about in his lectures, that the way that a mother has to see the future suffering of the child, because like William Blake, Jordan Peterson believes that life is suffering. And so if life is suffering, then you know as a parent that you're sending off your child into a world where it will suffer. And you're looking at this innocent, perfect little being, this angel that you can trace the holy God within its face, that you're going to send that being off into repeating the suffering that Jesus had to go through. And your baby's going to go through that as well. And that's what, you know, she and Christians tend to believe, especially during this period of time. So, you know, she's tracing it, you know, the holiness in its face. You know, another thing we'll see in a poem soon called Holy Thursday, that Blake believes that because of the innocence of babes, they're closer to God. So if you look at it like this spectrum of closeness to God, the infant is as close to God as possible. I mean, if you think about, if you believe that even, you know, if sex is what brings out a baby, that it's a holy thing and that it's part of God's plan, then there, you can, it's not a stretch to believe that the baby in some form was drawn up in the mind of some superconscious being of God. And he, you know, through the sexual process between, you know, using the man as his kind of conduit and the female as the vessel, he planted this infant there. Therefore, this infant is only like 5 months or 15 months from being, if you take the whole gestation process, from being removed, from being in the hands or in the brain, in the heart or whatever you want to think of God. Right. And so it went from God's brain. He implanted it, you know, in this process of two people having sex. The baby gestates for 9 months and comes out. And So that baby's very close, much closer than the mother, who is, you know, now 20 years plus 9 months away from seeing God. And so she's forgotten all of that. So you could see a lot of that, I think, the underlying ideology going on in that simple phrase, sweet babe, in your face, holy image I can trace. Sweet babe, once like you, your maker lay and wept for me. Next stanza. Wept for me, for thee, for all, when he was an infant small. Thou his image ever see, heavenly face that smiles on thee. So again, I think this is kind of continuing the idea that the Savior died for our sins, including the sins of the baby, right? Because babies have sin. And it's not one of my favorite Christian concepts, that babies have sin. But if you take original sin seriously, then they do. They are somehow sinned, sinful creatures. At least they have it in them. And Jesus wept for them. He wept for them. He wept for me, the mother. He wept for you. He wept for everybody. And he did this even as an infant. I mean, you could picture not literally Jesus, like, looking, you know, baby Jesus looking around and saying, oh, why, I feel bad for everybody, I'm going to cry for them. But you can also see, like, it's, you know, he's a baby, so babies cry. So that's one thing. But he's, again, we get this heavenly relationship. Thou his face ever see, you his image ever see. So the baby, her baby, sees the image of God all the time. It's there. And so there's an implication that we lose that ability as we get older, which is an old idea that, you know, we once had these concepts and they actually kind of move out of our brain as we get older. Smiles on thee, on me, on all, who became an infant small. Infant smiles are his own smiles. Heaven and earth to peace beguiles. So again, now we have this ending that's very simple, that Jesus is smiling on you and he's smiling on every infant, no matter who they are or where they are. So we have, again, this sweet, or there's wept only once. If you look at the first words of all of these stanzas, it goes sweet, 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 sleep, sweet, wept, smiles. And I don't think that's exactly an accident. There's a kind of idea that there's a desire for this emotion, this feeling of sweetness, and then it kind of transitions into weeping, and then and sleeping, I should say, and then weeping, and then smiling. The smiling, though, comes in the afterlife. That's why it's the last stanza. So I think this is a very simple poem. It's not that deep, but it's just saying, you know, something about the desires and pain that a mother or a parent, but I think in this case, particularly a mother, experiences. If you really want to understand this more, look at the statue, the Pietà by Michelangelo. And the Pietà, which stands for the pity, is a very famous sculpture of the Virgin Mary holding her son Jesus, the fully grown Jesus, after he's been executed. And, you know, she's not crying and screeching and, you know, shouting in anger, but there is a genuine loss. And it's a really interesting way it's the totality is convinced is expressed, because you not only get the sadness that she's obviously feeling, but you get a sense that she knew this was coming from the beginning and she expected it. And now it's here, which is a totally, it's quite a different feeling, is to know that your child's going to suffer and die. Now, the reality is that this is the case with every mother. Every mother knows that their child is going to grow old and die, or at least die. I shouldn't say grow old. So here's a better way of putting that. Every mother knows their child is going to die. They don't necessarily know they're going to grow old. They also know that they're going to suffer, and there's going to be, you know, in their mind, maybe even a sexual suffering, in terms of there could be the suffering of pain, of loss, of remorse, of guilt, of incapability of acquiring the woman that you, or the man that you want. In this case, it's going to be, you know, probably a woman. So because it's a boy, baby. So I think that feeling that a parent has, particularly a mother, is part of what is going on for this, you know, poem, that she wants to put all her hopes in this baby, and that's what she is going to do. But she's also simultaneously scared because she knows what's going to happen to it. Okay, so that is A Cradle Song. Next time, I think we will do The Divine Image by William Blake. And we have many more poems to go through. So I hope you enjoy this. Go to Spotify, iTunes, wherever you listen to podcasts, and subscribe so you can get the audio. I'm also doing sci-fi and a whole bunch of other, some short stories and other things that are audio only. So you need to go there. Find me on Facebook, YouTube, or wherever you want. Go to troubadourmag.com. So thank you very much, and I'll see you next time.